what, since the second half, really, how much they've really struggled.
Mind set.
Charged with finding some stability from this scrum, and he can't find it. That's a mighty shot. A mighty one. Leicester.
The scrum battle resumes now. And a big shot from Brazil. Oh, that's sensational.
Here comes the big Georgian scrum. They're absolutely demolished. The feature in front of.
No, we very much have that issue. I think it's one of the greatest things about club rugby, but also one of the hardest things.
Absolutely.
So depending on the time of year, we'll so as we go into pre-season before Christmas, we will be the whole club together. We'll split into teams, but those teams will be completely not graded. They won't even be position-specific, really. It'll just be groups. And it's as much about the top-level guys helping up skills. So as we've, you know, our threes and fours guys get better, if they ever do get called upon, they've had exposure to that sort of player and that sort of expectation of what they expect to deliver when they're at that level. As the season progresses, it's just a time where you have to go, okay, now we're splitting. And you split, and it's like you got to rip the Band-Aid off and do it.
Welcome back to the next episode of The Journey of a Grassroots Rugby Coach. And today, my guest is Cam Treloar. Cam is the current coach at West Harbour in the Shoot Shield, where in 2023, he was awarded Coach of the Year in the Shoot Shield in his first year as a head coach. Prior to that, he was an assistant coach at Warringah for a number of years, where he also played the majority of his rugby before going to France and had a few games of Super Rugby. We spoke about changing a club to enhance your coaching prospects and the difficulties that may be, transitioning from a player to a coach in very quick succession, how to reflect on training sessions, and how to give player-fed feedback during sessions. I really enjoyed my chat with Cam. We've spoken a few times about some different things. If you really like this session, feel free to pass it on to anyone you feel can benefit from it. But most of all, sit back, relax, and enjoy my chat with Cam Treloar.
This episode of The Journey of a Grassroots Rugby Coach is brought to you by Bull & Bear Crew. Bull & Bear Crew is a range of men's skincare products. There is face moisturizers, face mist, body wash, beard wash, shave oil, and moisturizer. They come in a 100ml pack, aluminium bottles, so they're safe for traveling. You can use them check-in your baggage. They also come in larger at-home bottles. All bottles are refillable, reusable, and recyclable. You can buy refill pouches to refill bottles you have at home if you don't want to purchase bottles from Bull & Bear Crew. They've just been released. Great product, all natural, or vegan, tested on men, not on animals, all that good stuff. Recyclable, reusable, and refillable, so you can use them over and over and over again. Go to their website, check them out, www.bullandbearcrew.com. Place your order. At the moment, they're only shipping within Australia, but keep your ears and your eyes out to the website. They may be able to extend the shipping at some point in the future. Please enjoy this episode.
All right, mate, let's make a start. All right, thanks for joining me, Cam. So just for the people that might not know who are you, whereabouts are you, and what's your involvement with the grassroots game?
So I'm currently the head coach at West Harbour up in the Shoot Shield in Sydney. I have just completed my first year there. I'd previously been an assistant at Warringah, played my whole club playing career at Warringah, interspersed with some overseas time and some Super Rugby time up in Brisbane. But I grew up in the country and then shifted to Sydney basically at the end of school to try and chase the rugby dream and still am doing it.
Yeah, nice. So how'd you find that shift from like being that one player, that one club player, and then having to go move to that other club to
to get some coaching under your belt?
Yeah, it was quite intimidating. Warringah is definitely really close to my heart. I'd genuinely never considered going anywhere else. When this opportunity came up, it sort of just everything, all the bits fell into place. Yeah. The club had just sort of, we were about to move back into our home ground after having 3 years away. That had a steady progression the year before. They'd started to get some good results at the back end of the season, and the timing was just right. And I'd sort of done 4 years with the same group at Warringah. They might have probably needed the change as much as I did. So the timing just worked out really well. And after making the change, it's probably the best thing I could have ever done. It's just been fantastic to discover a new environment and realise that outside of your little square that you live in, rugby people are rugby people wherever you go, and good people tend to be at rugby clubs. So you just get exposed to a whole different group of good people.
Yeah. No, you're dead right there, mate. Being good people. And there'd be a lot of coaches that listen to this that have been similar to you, mate, have been that one, played at one club, and then, they may be tossing up whether to move to another club to get some different exposure or to make that coaching change. So that's some good advice for them, mate. Thank you.
Because you can run the, in your head, you're feeling a level of disloyalty. However, the reality is at any level, people want the team to succeed and the club to succeed, and you're only a cog in the wheel. And when you pull yourself out of that thing, the wheel keeps turning, and then you realise that maybe you weren't quite as consequential as you thought you were. I'd encourage people, if you're in that moment and you're questioning about whether you should make the jump or you've got a fear about around it, go for it.
Yeah, nice. Good advice, mate. Really good advice. So what got you into coaching after your, because I know you played for a number of years. What did that transition into coaching look like? Did you always want to be a coach, or was it just something that you fell into?
No, I definitely fell into it. I never harbored any desires to coach at all. I sort of thought once I was playing, I was very happy to find a spot on the hill. But I actually had a, after coming back from overseas, and I played 2 years where I played solely the NRC. I didn't play any club footy. And then in 2016, I think it was, I sat out of footy altogether. And 2018. So 2017, I went back into club footy and realised how much I'd missed it. 2018, I'd retired at that point. And I got to pre-season time and I realised I had a big gaping hole and I didn't know how to fill it. So Darren Coleman was good enough to just bring me back down in really what was a bit part role. Like, it wasn't with first grade per se. It was just come down and you're part of the club coaching group, and wherever I tell you to go, you go. And that gave me my first exposure into coaching. And so I was really lucky that I had Ben McCormack at the time was the first grade forwards coach. So I just could sponge from him. And he was really, really good with that group and took them to a second grand final in a row. And, I got the bug from it, basically from being able to coach lower graders and given that light bulb moment, that was really, really satisfying.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good. Yeah, and there's a lot of coaches out there that fell into it, or still wanted to be involved, and they've just either coached their kids or whatever it is. So yeah, there's plenty of different paths we all take to get to where we are. That's good, mate. What's a lesson that you've learned from either a heartbreak or a disappointment that you've had as a coach? And the reason I ask this of the coaches that I talk to is we've all had them. But I think a lot of young coaches, when we're starting out as a coach and we have that, you know, shitty season or something goes wrong. And a lot of coaches just throw their toys out of the cot and they walk away, and or they go, oh, I'm not good enough for this, or whatever that thought process is. But the good coaches will go, yeah, that was crap, but let's actually strip it right back and let's reflect on it. And how do we move forward so when that happens next time, we're better prepared for it, or whatever that situation is?
I guess I was probably learning a humility lesson in that. In 2019, in my first year where I'd had an official role, we got through to the grand final, and I think we'd finished possibly first or maybe second at the end of the regular season, and we were going really well. But I was coaching a group that already had just made two grand finals previously. So in 2020, that group had a fairly significant turnover. And we had a far less successful season. And so I quickly realized that it was more the group I had that got us the success the year before, not my coaching. So I had to really upskill after that 2020 season, because I had many mistakes during that year. And so it was a real reality check around really where I was as a coach. It all came too easy too early, and really, quite honestly, had nothing to do with me. I just had a fantastic playing group that were humming at the end of a third year of a cycle. And I really just rode that wave. So the reality check of 2020, which was, I'm pretty sure that was a COVID season. That was the shortened season. But yeah, we were quite poor, and my coaching was pretty poor as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of us have been involved in those teams, mate, where it wouldn't have mattered who was coaching them. They were going to win that competition.
Yeah, and that's it. And it gives you probably a bit of a false sense of security, and makes you probably not realise how much work you do have to put in when you are at the other end of the scale. Things came easily. I had a great group of senior players who didn't need coaching by that point. They, like, you know, you were just sort of putting a bit of a cherry on top. They were... they experienced a lot of success and knew how to win games, and it was that first year was a false sense of security.
I know exactly what you're talking about, and the opposite is too. Like, you have really good coaches with underperforming teams, and then they walk away, and you just go, oh mate, you've got everything there. You're just probably with the wrong group of players.
Yeah, that's it. And it's like, you know, whoever the best coach in the world is, I don't know who it is, but whoever that person is, if they go in with a group of players who are never going to get there, even that person won't get them there. They might get them a little bit better than they were, but
yeah,
they're not going to get to the top.
Yeah, you could put an All Blacks coach with, you know, a third grade subbies team. They're still not going to win.
No, exactly. Yeah.
No, you're dead right, mate. You're dead right. No, that's really good. So Shoot Shield, you run four grades, I believe, and Colts.
Yeah, so we got four grades and three Colts, and a women's team.
Okay.
So, you know, I think this year we probably had just over 200 registered players at the club, which was from where we were probably 5 or 6 years ago, is really, really improved. You know, even last season the 2022 season, we were calling in old boys to play in fours just so we could put a team out.
Yeah.
You know, this season we had on occasions 15 reserves in fourth grade. So we're definitely trending in the right way, numbers wise.
Yeah, nice. So how does your training session look around? Because you're going to have, you Shoot Shield first grade players, second grade players. Do you split them into like ones and twos and then thirds and fourths, or do they all come in together and then they split? Because it can be a balance. It's a balancing act, especially at the lower grades, where you might be one or two coaches and you've got, you know, a potential elite player, or that player that's your best player, then you've got a guy that turns up who wants to play with his mates. He's only ever going to be a fourth grader, but he's probably going to be the major sponsor or the club president or the guy, you know, a rugby guy.
Yep.
You got to keep them both involved, but you want to develop both of them, but they're at different levels, and that could be a challenge. So do you have that issue at West Harbour, or do you split them up, or how does that look?
No, we very much have that issue. I think it's one of the greatest things about club rugby, but also one of the hardest things.
Absolutely.
So depending on the time of year, we'll so as we go into pre-season before Christmas, we will be the whole club together. We'll split into teams, where those teams will be completely not graded. They won't even be position specific, really. It'll just be groups. And it's as much about the top level guys helping up skills. So as we've, you know, our threes and fours guys get better, if they ever do get called upon, they've had exposure to that sort of player and that sort of expectation of what they expect to deliver when they're at that level. As the season progresses, it's just a time where you have to go, okay, now we're splitting, and you split, and it's like you got to rip the Band-Aid off and do it. We still try and do some stuff together as best we can. So this year we trained Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday nights in the top squad. And so that we call that the West squad, and our Harbour squad, we had just Tuesday, Thursday. So we'd always invariably try and do all our warm-up together, play a fun game together, then split off depending on the night. We probably didn't get as much crossover as we would have liked. We're really lucky in that we had a great bunch of aspirational third and fourth graders who'd come down on the Wednesday night off their own bat and be down there, get involved in the drills. If we had a holder fill, they'd step in, play out of position. They just wanted to be around and be involved and getting better. So that was really good. But it is a balancing act, and especially like probably at third grade level, you've got guys who are really aspirational and guys who legitimately could play first grade if you needed them to, yet sort of have to, just by way of things, drop their level of training a bit down to accommodate where they're at. That's quite hard because they don't want to. They want to be up in the top group, training hard and doing all the extras. However, they're not. So I think third grade's almost your most important group of coaches, because you need to be able to keep that group inspired, and they need to be feeling like they're getting better. I think that third grade coach is probably the most important guy in your club almost.
Yeah. Nice. Now that's some good insight there, mate, because we only have three grades down here, but for us it's the second grade. The second graders are those guys that potentially going to play. And I think all our second graders this year got minutes in first grade.
Yep.
And then some of them are, want to play first grade. Some are just happy to play second grade. And then third graders, for us, our third graders are either young guys that have just started playing, or they're all ex-first graders that are just too fat and too slow to play first grade anymore, or they got work commitments or family, like they can't train. And so, you've still got that skill level there. So, and like you said, getting that balancing act is really important. Now that's good, mate. So what would for your top squad, what would a normal training session sort of look like for your guys?
So depending on the night, so the way we worked it this year, we did review and preview on the same night. We did it on our Tuesday night. So we went into the week fully aware of what we needed to improve on, but also what we're going to try and do during the week. That Tuesday night, we probably get through sort of the slower side of things, like as you're trying to work out your role clarity and that sort of stuff. Big set piece focus on that night. Wednesday night was our big night. Wednesday night would be upbeat, really fast, plenty of running. If we had contact that week, that's when we'd do it. that night was probably ended up being our most important night of the week. We'd sort of do 5-minute blocks of non-stop rugby, basically, just to as part of our conditioning as well. I think that really served us well going through the season. The problem, what I think sort of ended up happening in our games as well, is because we'd always at the start of a Wednesday go through that role clarity stuff and be slow at the start of the session and build in through the speed. And so by the end of the session, we're going full noise. We ended up sort of playing like that. And so first 20 minutes in the game, we were one of the worst teams in the comp for points scored in the first 20 minutes, but we were the best team in the comp for the last 20 minutes. So that's definitely something I'll change this season. And then Thursday night, we'd be on field by 6:30, off field by 7:30. It really was just to sort of tie a bow on the week. Get through almost a traditional captain's run. We might do some 15 versus 15, just bodies in front stuff. But it really was about just putting the polish on. And then the back end of that training would just be position-specific skills. So the guys had split off and they'd be spreading themselves out over the whole field, just getting whatever they wanted done, whether it be a little breakdown drill or some scrum shape or whatever they sort of wanted to do, but we sort of left that in their hands. Yeah. There wasn't really an expectation around it. If they said, nah, I'm good, I'm done, I'm ready to go, they'd head off. But to be honest, not many of them did. Most of them would stay around and do something. So that Thursday night was quite short, sharp and intense and in and out.
Yeah. Nice. No, that's really good, mate. That's around splitting up the week too. Because I think as young coaches, we tend to just try and smash them with so much contact, and then by the halfway, towards the end of the season, they're just broken because there's been too much contact.
Yeah, that's it. I think I've sort of shifted from that a little bit. Like, there's some stuff you can't. There's only one way to learn.
Yeah, of course.
More. But in terms of that tram track, hard body on body breakdown stuff, we might do maximum 5 minutes a week.
Yeah.
And that's really focused on something we've spoken about during that week, and it'll be quite a targeted session on it. It wouldn't be just doing it for doing its sake. I sort of want them to save their hits for Saturday. And then in that position specific skills stuff, a lot of them would go and do a little bit of breakdown stuff for themselves anyway. But it was just been a bit more of a controlled fashion. But I think, yeah, that how we split the week, I'll probably change it this year a little bit. I think my sort of theory was that I'd been in the past, I hadn't got enough out of Monday nights because you're always generally carrying banged up bodies. Guys can't do this, that, or the other. So I tried to skip the Monday and go straight into the Tuesday. But doing three nights back to back probably worked up until the halfway point of the season. But as we entered that back half, guys were pretty mentally cooked. And then I found myself having to drop sessions because of the training quality was down or whatever it might be. So I'll probably go back to doing a Monday, but I'll just vary what I actually want to get out of it. I'll take away the fact that if there's a banged up body there, everything we'll do won't stress that body. So we'll be all very slow learning. There'll be some skill involved. But it won't be anything that someone who's carrying a little niggle can't do, just so we still get some value out of it.
Yeah, it's a good point you mentioned there, mate, about the mental fatigue that these guys get, and getting that balance right to how much do we try and teach them over a short period of time? Can we stretch it out? So there's all those things that we try and get right. And we might get it right one year, and the next year we get it completely wrong. Different group of players, different skill. There's all that stuff we need to keep reflecting on. So
you've got to factor in what's their work done like. What's their some guys work away from where we train, so they'll get up at 5. Go to the gym, go to work all day, come to training, sit in the review room, get on the field, and their day starts at 5 and they're leaving at 8. it's a big day. So when you're backing that up back to back to back, it's taxing. So I'll probably learn from that, and we'll make the changes this year to see how we go with a different format.
Yeah. No, that's good. Being able to recognise that with your players as well, mate. What's a highlight or a really good moment that you've had as a coach so far?
It was probably a game this season versus Eastwood. We'd had a number of last minute losses, and we got a last minute win. It was one of those seesawing games, and the 2 minutes to go, they got a penalty the bell had gone. They got a penalty, missed it. We attacked out of our in goal, got up to the 70 meter line, got a turnover and slotted the goal. So it was just a really joyous moment, and most of what we worked on during the week worked. Eastwood had been on a run of a number of victories at that point, and it was a really important game for our season as well. And we were looking to get our first set of three wins in a row. And the one game where we probably had really not performed was Eastwood round one. So it was good to go back against that team who were stronger at that point. They'd got a lot of their Super Rugby players back and perform. And that was a really good moment. And as a head coach, the week just worked. Our defence stuff that our defence coach implemented worked. Our attack coach had really analysed them really well and found weak spots. Our scrum coach had picked a certain thing that really worked for us. So everything sung that day. And even though everything really worked well for us, we still only won after the bell, but we won. That was a really good moment for us. And it was just a joyous moment in the coaching box as well, because all of us were up there. Normally we had one guy who also coaches a first 15 school team, so he wasn't able to be there sometimes. So we just had everyone there that day because of school holidays. And it was a good win. So that'd be probably one of my highlights of my coaching. Making the grand final was a really good moment for us in 2019. But what came with that was losing it the week after. So you get the high and the low of that. It's mostly little moments that you get that might happen on a Tuesday night where you help someone get something they didn't get before, or understand something they didn't quite understand before. And they're probably the moments that keep you going. Those big highs are few and far between. But it's just those little moments on a Tuesday where you get someone has that click moment and you go, oh, this is why I do it. And that's what keeps you coming back more often than not.
Yeah. And mate, majority of the coaches I speak to say very similar things, mate. We remember the big wins and the trophies and the championships, but it's when, you know, that guy that couldn't do that, all of a sudden you see him click and then he looks at you and you go, oh, yeah. Exactly right. You just go, that's why I do what I do. That person just did that or whatever it was. Yeah, no, it's really good, mate. Thank you. Feedback, and I know there's plenty of ways around to give feedback and stuff like that, but during a session, and I don't think anyone does it the way that was done when I used to play, probably when you started playing, you know, everyone stops and you're doing push-ups and all this type of stuff. What does that team feedback look like for you during a session?
It's got to be early. And I tend to try and let it be self-identified first. I won't be the person to call it up unless I can say, okay, no one's picked this up. No one's seen what's going on here. I tend to like to let it happen organically, because I'm not on the field when it's happening on the field. So I can't fix it for them. You send the radio over the message, but you know, you might not get a message out there for 5 or 6 minutes. So, I try and let it happen organically. If not, before we go to the next play, though, I'll blow it up and we'll talk about it. I try to give feedback instantaneously. In terms of a team setting, I definitely learn a lot around individual feedback this year. That was probably a big work on for me out of our reviews. But yeah, in terms of a team setting, I like to get it early. If it's as we're on the run and it's just an individual little work on, yeah. I won't stop the session for that. I'll just as we're walking to the next thing, I'll walk next to the guy and just say what needs to be said and let him get back into position. I won't stop the session unless it's a whole group learning thing. I'll just make little error corrections as we go.
Yeah, nice. And that's a really good point you made there, mate, that we're not on the field. And I think, too, once you've got that culture where the players can self-identify it and they pick it up, mate, and the learning's quicker as well because they're all trying to make each other better. So.
That's it. And at the end of the day, like, mate, our voices get really tired really quickly for the players' ears. So I think the more that it's player-led and player-driven and player – brought around by player buy-in, the more punch it has when the message is delivered. So that's sort of how I like to run it. In terms of the individual feedback stuff, I definitely learned a lot on that this year. I was way too vague and way too airy-fairy with it. And not constant enough with it. Like, I'd give someone some feedback in week one. And hadn't really gone back and touched base with that person. Like, I might drop a player for reason X. Player Y comes in and plays really well, and therefore that person who I dropped's been down there for 5 weeks. And I haven't touched base with them on it. So I really learned this season how important that is.
Yeah.
Go back and go, mate, I still haven't quite seen the improvement here. This is why this is happening. I sort of thought, okay, this is my initial feedback. That's done now. In our reviews, that got identified quite often by the players. So I always ask the players, mate, what can I do better? And when it becomes a pattern of same feedback, is probably pretty correct. And, you know, if it's one guy, you might go, oh, I just think he didn't quite get the message. But if I'm getting it from a number of players, it's me who's doing the wrong thing.
Yeah, and that's some good self-reflection too, mate, being able to have that honest conversation with the players and them feeling that they can actually say to you, mate, this is what's working, this is what's not working.
Yeah,
absolutely. Mate, they're difficult conversations to have at the best of times.
No one wants to be told they're going, something's wrong. No one wants to be told that you're not doing... Yeah. As good as you think you're doing it. It's a hard thing to hear, especially when you're putting a huge amount of effort in and you've got a huge amount of emotional investment in it.
Yeah.
And you really are trying hard and it's still not working. You have to be prepared to thick skin's the wrong word for it. You just have to be prepared to realize that it's actually making you better. Better to hear it. And so long as you don't go and make the same mistakes twice, then it's really well worthwhile. So I haven't had a chance to fix any of these problems yet because we're in the off season and we're going to a new season. But it's been awesome to have that feedback from them because now I get a chance to put into action for the year after.
Yeah, no, and I think too, mate, the players appreciate that as well. That you're seeking that feedback from them, I suppose, and then. It allows them to have a voice as to what they think, you know, not just around the feedback, but, you know, this isn't working, that's working, that worked really well.
Yeah.
And like you said, it just builds those connections with the players, because as long as they know it's coming from a good place.
Yeah.
And my boys know I hate having those conversations.
Yeah.
You know? And some of them know it, and they bloody, you know, they cheer you up about it. But anyway, that's the fun of it too, I suppose.
It's tough because these are people you genuinely care about.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, you, on any given day, like, you're people you're going to have a beer with or you'd be friends with. You're a coach, you got to keep that little bit of distance there, but there's no easy way to do it. You just got to do it.
Yeah, I know, right? So what do you do around coach development? So we've got all the coach education side of it, and that's where we first met up, is through some Rugby Australia Coach Ed stuff. But all the stuff we do away from the classroom to develop as coaches, which is probably coach education's got its place in that. But if we just rely on coach education, you're probably not going to get better as a coach.
Yeah, agreed. Look, I've got a number of people I chat to regularly, like other coaches in the Shoot Shield. I really enjoy chatting to them. We're pretty open with each other. You know, none of us are. We're not selling state secrets, you know. Like it's not. We can sit there and watch a video, so we're not learning much. We probably couldn't see from watching it on Huddle.
Yeah, it's on Huddle, mate.
But we can. We obviously pick each other's brains post a game and go, "Oh, mate, yeah. What'd you say here? Why'd you do that? What were you analysing?" So I struck up a bit of a relationship with a few guys from this season with that, a lot of those guys were in level four with us, you know. Like, and it was really good, I think. But having that connection allowed us to do that. And we'd spoken about it at the level four. And so it's good that we actually followed through with and did it. I tried to get out there to the Waratahs a bit. I thought I'd get out there way more. I just didn't get the time. Mm. I was really lucky to go and have some time down in the Brumbies too. That was a real opener. They run a good ship down there. And, you know, this was in the pre-season period, so it might have been a little bit different to how it works in season. So I got to the Waratahs in season. It was probably less on field time, a lot more review and preview of games and what was coming up, which was really good to see how they did it. But what the Brumbies in their pre-season setting had a key message they were driving for that day, and the entire day revolved around it from 7 a.m. through to 4 p.m. And they just banged on it and banged on it and banged on it all day. And, you know, the meetings were about it. The video was about it. The review of the drone session was about it. Then they go to lunch. Then they do it in a 15-versus-15 scenario. And then they have the leaders bang on about it at the end. So that was really impressive to see. And obviously that's something you can do in a professional environment, but it definitely gave me a lot of good takeaways. I'm actually going over to France on Thursday and going to visit a lot of my old clubs. So I'm meeting with the coaches there and hopefully I can get some good takeaways from there, especially around the set piece. Like France is a big, big on set piece and I reckon that can be really a real point of difference at Shoot Shield level. So I'm trying to go there and get as many takeaways as I can. Just having the ability to call people up and say, what do you think about this? I'm certainly not afraid to say I don't know. And so I'm happy to go and, you know, hat in hand and say, can you help me? In terms of a pure development scenario, I just take whatever tidbits I can with the time I've got. I enjoy listening to podcasts. Like I listen to your podcast and to Chubby's podcast. I listen to those sort of things because I might get one thing out of it.
Yeah. But
that's one thing more than I had before. I don't read a lot, but I should. But that's sort of about where I go with PD, and I'm really looking forward to this French experience. I think it'll be really good and really eye-opening and good to see it. Even just see how my clubs developed from when I was there compared to where they're at now. Yeah. When I was there, we were down the lower end of the table and trying to avoid to get relegated, but now they're up in the top three teams. It's just going to be really good to go and learn.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point about just asking people for advice and admitting that you don't know. Because I know when I first started coaching, mate, there's no way I'd talk to another coach about anything because the guy'd go, mate, that guy think I'm a dickhead.
Yeah.
You talk to them, they go, oh, yeah, that happened. Something similar happened to me. And this is what you just go, oh, okay. Because everyone's been there. Like, you know what I mean? And once you swallow that pride and just go, yeah, I actually don't know, you know, but who do I know that can help me out with that, you know? Yeah. Can I ring this bloke or that bloke? Or, yeah, no, it's really good, mate. Yeah, mate, I'm not a reader either, so don't get. I'm into pods and a few audio books and stuff like that. And I just don't have time to read.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Though. Like I listen to yours and Toby's podcast. And I was going, oh, I've read 44 books this year, and I'm like, when? How?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I should read, but I find my enjoyment elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I find it hard to read because it's like you get home from work and you're home for like an hour, you know, say good day to the missus, play with the dog, then get ready, off the training, get home, dinner, shower, bed, get up, go to work. And that's the cycle.
Yeah, 100%.
And then, you know, Saturday's game day. So you're gone from, you know, early in the morning, you get home. And then Sunday, I don't know. We don't get our huddle footage till Monday. So Sundays, that I'm not going to do anything. I just got to do stuff around the house, you know.
Yeah.
And then it just keeps rolling. Yeah, I don't know how guys get time to read books. Anyway, they obviously got plenty of time, so that's all right.
All power to them.
Exactly right, mate. Exactly right. Cool. No, this has been great, mate. One more, and I'll let you go because I know you're busy and you're getting ready for your trip. What advice would you give yourself if you could go back to that first year of coaching, knowing what you know now?
It'd definitely just be keep it really, really simple. I think I've said before that I think in the first year I was coaching, I was really keen to, because I was worried about, because I played with a lot of the guys who I was now coaching, I wanted them to know that I knew what I was doing. So I just tried to make everything complicated and like really fancy and really elaborate.
Yeah.
And it probably was like a diminishing return because we'd get probably five less reps in because I'd spend an extra 5 minutes talking about what we're trying to get done. And so I would go back and tell myself, just do the basic, like you can do this drill so much simpler. You can achieve this outcome with something really simple. So do it that way because the outcome's the important thing, not the not you trying to prove you know what you're doing.
Yeah, mate, and that's a really good point, mate. That time is, I didn't realise how valuable it was until I started doing some rep stuff down here and everything's like you said, now the 5 minute blocks and 4 minute blocks. It takes me 2 minutes to explain it. No, it doesn't. You don't get an extra 2 minutes.
Yep.
You've got 30 seconds to explain it and we're away and you're just like, oh shit.
Yeah.
Try and so you've got to stop trying to prove you're the smartest person in the room. You just got to tell them, you know, what you're doing.
And hope
they follow you.
At a sort of first grade level, most of the guys do know what they're doing. So you don't need to, and it's okay to go back to the same drill. Like you don't need to create a whole new thing.
No.
If the players get bored of it, that's on them. They need to, you know, like you might have 4 minutes. So why spend three of it explaining your new drill that's going for the same outcome that you got the week before? Let's make that good. Keep going for that.
Yeah.
Going back to that. So that when you do dip back into the world, the guys go, yep, we've done this before. Off we go.
Yeah. And,
I definitely learned. I was trying to run it through the hands six different ways. But really, it's reach, pass, reach, and pass. And you know, you're trying to teach the same skill with 43 different versions of the same, of different language, but you've just got to keep it simple. And that's definitely one thing I've learned.
Yeah, nice. No, really good, man. Thanks so much for your time, man. Have a great trip to France. I might bump into you while I'm over there.
When are you going over there?
I'm going over for the final, so end of October.
Yeah, I'll miss you. I'm back at the 12th of October. So
I'll miss you then, mate.
I'll be the game this weekend, so.
Nice, mate. Have a great time. Thanks so much. Thanks for your time, man. It's been great.
No, cheers, mate. I really appreciate it.
Awesome.
That's a mighty shot. A mighty man, Leicester, have driven them off their own ball. That is monstrous.
Closely held at the back by the foot of Ben Moore, Pepton and England. Marching it on, wording in a penalty. Still there, there is the penalty.
Extraordinary 30 meter scrum and drive wins the penalty.